Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. The image many of us have of Thomas Edison is of a single genius inventor from whom scores of remarkable technological advances emerged at the turn of the 20th century. But writer, Milwaukee native, and Edison's great-grandniece, Sarah Miller Caldicott, says one of Edison's most vital achievements was in assembling remarkable teams of collaborators around him in his laboratory. And in her new book, Midnight Lunch, Caldicott says the business world has much to learn from the collaborative approach of Edison, who was born 166 years ago today. Caldicott joins us on the line from the Chicago area. Good morning. Welcome to Lake Effect.
It's a pleasure.
The business world was seemingly a much different place a century ago. So why would you contend that Thomas Edison's approach to collaboration holds such relevance today?
Well, one of the things that's been true for us over the last several decades is we lived in the industrial age, a time when we were focusing on efficiency and production. A lot of organizations had what we might describe as a pyramid structure, where you have a few people at the top who give direction and provide leadership, and then there are layers of people cascading down through that pyramid that actually do the work. So as we have continued forward into the innovation age or the digital era, we're finding that these pyramid structures are a little bit more awkward. The information flows vertically, really, in an industrial age structure, but today in the digital era, information flows horizontally through the internet and other virtual systems that we've developed. In Edison's time, he worked in a very flat structure. He did not have layers of managers and supervisors. So the way he worked was actually more along the lines of this horizontal flow of information that we're seeing today as so necessary. So that's a big reason why we can go back to Edison and look at his collaborative processes for clues to success.
Well, of course, collaboration is not a new concept, but you write a lot about true collaboration. And so I was hoping you could share the distinction between what you see as a true collaboration and just putting together a group of coworkers in a team.
Sure. This notion of true collaboration is extremely important because, as I see it, there are really four phases to how Edison proceeded with his collaboration processes. And one of the first phases I call capacity. And within the capacity phase, there's the formation of collegiality. People feeling like they can trust each other, roll up their sleeves, and do work together. This is really one of the foundational underpinnings of what collaboration requires. If that is not present, it's much more difficult to undertake the other phases. So Edison was really masterful at driving this sense of collegiality, that people could bring forward ideas, that it was a low-risk thing to put something forward to your colleagues and actually experiment around those conversations and you know, take action on them. That's really one of the most important things we need to look at today.
Well, and that, as you say, that collegiality extended all the way to Thomas Edison. You write about his ability to get into the trenches with his team, for example, in the Midnight Lunches from which the book takes its title.
Absolutely. And Midnight Lunch is, in fact, part of this first phase that I described. A Midnight Lunch was really the practice that Edison sort of put together with his people after hours. Edison would go home for dinner. He'd come back to the Menlo Park lab or one of his other labs after 7 o'clock, would check in on his experiments, see how other experiments were faring in the lab. There tended to be 10, 12 people there on any given evening. And he would bring those people together. They'd share ideas about their experiments for a couple hours. And then Edison would order in food. And this was the midnight lunch, right? About 9 o'clock, he'd bring in sandwiches and beverages. They would kick back, sing songs, share stories, and then continue with work for another 2 hours or so. So it was the combining of their expertise, their sharing, and the social environment that led to a casual, collegial environment. So this is part of how Midnight Lunch built collegiality at the lab.
Well, and I gather there was something about how he assembled his lab teams themselves that was also novel for its time. He found what you would label an incredibly diverse group of people, all who sort of played a complementary role.
Absolutely. And this is very important for us today to look at our teams and see how diverse they are in terms of the level of expertise that's present and the level of sort of general knowledge or contribution that's present. Edison didn't like to just have experts work on something. He liked to balance experts with generalists. So I like to think that he sort of had a two-thirds, one-third rule, if you will, that two-thirds of the people were generalists, one-third were experts and specialists. And through that process, he developed multiple perspectives in his problem-solving endeavors. This is how he generated so many disruptive innovations: recorded sound, document duplication, electrical power, motion pictures, and more. So just having experts work on something was not the way that Edison generated so many disruptive inventions.
Well, and one of the elements of collaboration you write about that I thought was especially interesting was about flawed mental models. So what can we learn from Edison's first big failure, and how do you frame it in terms of the importance of the collaborative approach?
Well, mental models are sort of the filter of how we look at the world as individuals. And Edison was always examining his own mental model and encouraged his employees to do the same. Edison's first failure actually came with his very first patented invention. And you can imagine how excited he was at age 22 to get his first patented invention. But he did not really successfully look at who was going to use this invention. It was an electronic vote recorder designed for the Massachusetts legislature. And although the legislators found that the electronic vote recorder worked perfectly, they didn't need it. It wasn't something that actually helped or addressed a need that they had. So Edison realized that he had acted on his own idea, and he hadn't really done any kind of sounding out or creating of context around the idea. So he realized his mental model, if you will, his filter, was flawed. So he changed it. He changed to looking at questions first, asking questions, trying to understand potential ways to solve a problem, and not just seizing upon one at the very beginning and pursuing that. So I think this is something we could really take on board today.
How much did Edison himself either write or talk about his philosophy of collaboration?
Well, you know, if you go through the notebooks, and there are thousands of them, if you look at court testimonies and patent filings, all kinds of documentation that we have access to via archives, there are literally millions of pages of documentation. Edison didn't really use the word collaboration. He certainly talked a lot about teams, but what we can see is the outcomes, the impact of how he was thinking about collaboration. Who did he bring together on his teams? How did he compensate them? He had profit sharing, for example, in his laboratories. This was a very new concept in his day. In Edison's time, only two people could be on a patent at once. So he had to choose between his children, as it were, when he was going forward into the marketplace and who was going to get royalties along with himself around an invention. So this is partly why he shared the profits of the lab with others, because he knew he wasn't able to recognize the collaboration of everybody with one single patent. So we see collaboration coming forward as well in how he developed people. He cross-trained people so that they would be able to work on different projects, projects related to sound, projects related to electricity, or motion. This cross-training was part of his belief in collaboration as a central sort of heartbeat, if you will, to his laboratories. And collaboration through experimentation is another very important one. He taught everyone how to experiment, and this created a collaborative backbone, if you will, to the organization. So while we don't see him use the term collaboration specifically to a large extent, we can see it through his practices.
Well, and there is kind of an irony because here he was inventing these devices to record pictures and sound, and very little of that was ever aimed at himself. We don't have many recordings of him. He spent more time recording other people.
Yes, you know, I think this is fascinating because the man who created recorded sound through the phonograph and the record, the man who created the movies through motion picture cameras, films, and film projection, you know, didn't just stand in front of the camera or didn't just, you know, put his own voice on lots of records. He was really about impacting others and reaching out to others. So this is really extraordinary today. I think we see perhaps a different mindset operating today, perhaps more of a me focus in how innovation can come forward in the 21st century. But Edison was very outwardly focused, looking at how he could serve humankind, how he could create benefit to our daily lives, increasing the efficiency and the productivity of what we do.
Is this, would you say, an especially pivotal time to get this message out there? Is there something about the early part of the 21st century that makes this particularly important?
Well, I think there is. And a lot of it, I believe, is driven by the increasing penetration of smart devices and mobile devices around the world. Literally, there are over 5 billion mobile phones in use globally. On a planet with 7+ billion people, we see the increased penetration of smartphones and tablets and laptops as more everyday working instruments. So because of this, we have collaborative capacities that never existed before. And that's why understanding how collaboration works, what the components of collaboration are, these four phases I describe in my book, and as leaders and executives and just people operating in our everyday lives, we need to be able to recognize collaboration, to articulate what it means and what it includes so that we can be more successful and effective.
Well, Sarah Miller Caldicott, it's pretty fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
It's been great, Mitch. Thank you.
Milwaukee native Sarah Miller Caldicott's new book is called Midnight Lunch, The Four Phases of Team Collaboration Success from Thomas Edison's Lab, published by Wiley. Caldicott, who was a great-grandniece of Thomas Edison, lives in the Chicago area. You can find a link to much more about her and the book at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Another break now, and then our automotive contributor joins us with a somewhat fond, somewhat not so fond look back at some car makes and models gone by. It's Lake Effect on WUWM.